Welcome to the second video in our four-part introduction to Microsoft R Server. In this session, we'll be discussing importing data into MRS for analysis from a variety of data sources, whether that's text files, databases, and so on. But first, let's briefly recap what Microsoft R Server is. MRS extends R's power and overcomes a couple of the key weaknesses of R by adding some new features. The first of those is parallel processing. Open source R is fundamentally single-threaded, which means that even on a modern PC with multiple cores, open source R does all of its processing on just a single core. MRS, in contrast, will take advantage of all of the cores on a workstation, or if you're working in a distributed computing context, it'll take advantage of all the nodes that you make available to it. The second key feature is that MRS moves data storage from physical memory onto the hard drive. Now, in open source R, essentially all of the data that you import has to fit into your computer's physical memory. However, in MRS, data storage is moved to the disk, so your hard drive becomes a limiting factor, not the RAM available to you. And if you have a distributed file system, like HDFS, your data capacity becomes genuinely huge. Now, when we move data to disk, there are any number of file formats that we can use to store it. Text files, binary files, a wide variety of databases. And MRS can work directly with many of these formats. Now, of course, there are advantages and disadvantages to each of these, which is a bit beyond the scope of this video. So today we're going to focus primarily on MRS's own native file format, the external data frame, or XDF file. XDF files have a few key advantages that make them particularly well-suited to the kinds of processing that you're likely to be doing in MRS. The first of those advantages is that XDF files are chunk-oriented, which means that groups of rows are written to disk in a way that makes them easy to pull up one chunk at a time. And that makes it easy to distribute chunks of data to nodes for distributed computing, and it also means that when you have a new chunk of data to append to an existing file, you don't have to rewrite the entire file to just add new rows to the end, because they can just be written down as a chunk. Within chunks, XDF files are also column-oriented, which means that values are written to the disk in a way that makes it fast to retrieve entire variables at once. And of course, in machine learning and statistics, we're often most interested in all of the values of a single variable at one time, rather than all of the values relating to a single record or observation at a single time. Finally, XDF files include pre-computed metadata about their variables, the number of observations, the number of variables you have, the type of every variable, and the low and high value of each variable in your dataset. When you're dealing with truly large datasets, that can be an advantage because it means that you can get a quick overview of your data without needing to read the entire file just to know the lowest and highest values of each variable, for example. So now that we know a bit about the philosophy of the XDF file, let's look at how to create one. Typically, we'd be using the function rximport to create an XDF file. rximport is a really powerful function with a lot of configuration options, but today we'll just focus on the ones that you're most likely to use in normal analysis. First, to specify your input data, you'll use the inData argument. To specify the path where you'd like to create a new XDF file, or the path to an existing XDF file that you'd like to modify, you'd use the outFile argument. Vars to keep and vars to drop both let you specify which variables from your source data you'd like to include in your new XDF file. NumRows lets you specify how many rows of the source data you'd like to import, which can be useful when you're first getting familiar with the dataset and don't want to overwhelm your machine with the entire dataset. The row selection argument lets you set criteria for which rows should be imported, much like the WHERE clause from a SQL query. And finally, overwrite and append tell rximport how to behave when you're dealing with an existing XDF file. Now that we have an overview of the common arguments to rximport, let's see it in action. First, let me introduce the sample data that we'll be working with in this session. Every installation of MRS includes a wide variety of datasets so that you can try out its different functionality. And you can find the directory that those datasets are stored in using the rxgetOption function and the argument sampleDataDir. You might notice that this function has the rx prefix again. And as you'll see throughout these sessions, rx is the common prefix for all of the functions in MRS. So when I run rxget option to get the sample data dir, essentially R just gives me a path where that sample data is stored. Now, that tells me where the sample datasets are, but it doesn't tell me what's available. But to do that, I can use the open source R function list.files and pass this sample data directory to it. And you can see that it gives me a full list of all the files in that directory. And there are a few different sample datasets. Here's sort of the classic airline dataset in both CSV and XDF format. There's a variety of other datasets, claims, mortgage default data, and these are available in a variety of formats as well, like the CSV. Here's a SAS 7BDAT file, and also a SQLite database. So whenever you need a dataset to experiment with in MRS, you can use this function, rxgetoption sample data dir, to find the set of datasets. Now, let's say that I wanted to import the mort default small 2000.csv dataset. So this is 1 year of mortgage default data, and it's not a very big set, but it's just for trying things out. The first thing I would do is set up an object in the R workspace that points to that file. And so I'm going to use the R function file.path to create a file path out of the directory of the sample data dir and the mortgage default small 2000.csv. So when I run that code, you can see that what I get, all CSV path is just a pointer to that file set. So next, I want to create a path where my new XDF file will be created. And in this case, since this is just a demo, I'm just going to use the open source R function temp file to create a temporary file path where I'll store this data. So if I go ahead and run that, you can see that just like CSV path, XDF path is just a file path here on my machine. But it's important to note that that file doesn't actually exist yet. So I can check that with the file.exist function, and R says false, that file doesn't exist yet. So to create it, I can use the rximport function. And first I'm going to specify CSV path as my in data, and then I want that XDF path that I just created as my out file argument. And so when I run that code, you can see MRS gives me a little output here that says that it read 10,000 records, it processed 10,000 records, and it took much less than a second. And so that is reassuring, but just to be sure, I'm going to use another MRS function, rxgetinfo, and I'm just going to point it to that XDF path and see what's there. So you can see rxgetinfo tells me some useful things about this dataset. It tells me that there are 10,000 observations, 6 variables. Number of blocks is how many chunks there are in the dataset. So for a relatively small dataset like this, there's no need to split it up into multiple chunks. But if we were dealing with a bigger dataset, we might see this number of blocks increasing. The XDF file is compressed just to save room on disk. And then finally, because I set get var info equal to true inside of rxgetinfo, I also get an overview of each of the variables in that dataset. When I was first talking about the XDF, I mentioned the metadata that it stores for each variable, and you can see that here. So the type of each variable is listed. These are all integer variables. The low and high value of each variable is listed, so I can see at a glance that these are reasonable scores. This is a reasonable range for credit scores. 0 to 40 is a reasonable range for house age, and so on. And I can see here, for example, that default, while it's stored as an integer, has low and high values of 0 and 1. So even though that's stored as an integer, this tells me that it's actually a binary variable. So in the code we just saw, I set a CSV file as the in data, but rximport can take any number of other file formats as well, a SAS, SPSS, an ODBC connection, which we'll discuss a little more later on. Outfile, on the other hand, pretty much always takes an XDF file. Now, that could be an existing XDF file or the path to an XDF file that you'd like to create. However, if you leave outfile blank, it'll return a data frame of the import to your R workspace. Now, if your data is small enough, that can be a useful thing. But if your data set's too big, that could slow down or possibly crash your R session. Now, oftentimes when we're pulling data from a large data source, we only want to pull a few key variables. And RxImport includes two options for limiting the number of variables that are brought in. The first is vars to keep, which lets you pass a name of the variables that you want to pull out of the source data. And the second is vars to drop, which, as you might expect, just is a list of names of variables that you don't want to pull from the data. So using these two arguments strategically can really speed up a data import process by eliminating a lot of variables that you don't need. So let's take a quick look at how that might be used. So you can see I've set up a pretty similar Rx import. CSV path is still my in data. XDF path is still my out file. And this time I've added vars to keep with a list of two variables that I'd like to keep, credit score and default. So I'll go ahead and run this Rx import code. You can see it goes similarly as the last one. And I'll use rxgetInfo again to check the results. And this time I've added a new argument, numRows equals 5, because I just want to see the first 5 rows of the data set. So you can see, again, I have 10,000 observations, but I'm down to just 2 variables. And you can see that they are credit score and default. Here's their type and their highs and lows. And then here I have just the first 5 records showing the credit scores and the defaults of those first 5 rows. Now, sometimes it's easier to name all of the variables that you want to keep, and other times it's easier to name all of the variables that you don't want. So depending on which situation you find yourself in, vars to keep may be easier, or you can use vars to drop. So in this Rx import, I'm going to end up with the same 2 variables, credit score and default, but instead of asking for them specifically, I'm going to eliminate everything else that I don't want, which are the 4 variables, house age, years employed, CC debt, and year. So I'll go ahead and run that Rx import. Again, the results are very similar, and I'll check the results again, and you can see they're just the same as they were before. 10,000 observations, 2 variables, credit score, and default. Now, probably just as often as we want to select only certain variables from a source data set, we might also want to select only certain rows from a data set. And Rx import has 2 options for that. The first, numRows, basically takes an integer that specifies how many rows you want to keep from the data set. So that's by no means a random selection or subsample of the data set, but it is an easy way to get just a smaller chunk of your source data, which is often useful when you're first getting to know a data set and don't necessarily need all of the rows just to find out what's going on. The second option is row selection, which is much like the where clause from a classic SQL query. It lets you specify one or more criteria and only returns the rows from your source data that match those criteria. So here you can see I've got another Rx import set up. CSV path is still my in data. I've added numRows equal 10 to get just 10 rows from my source data. And you'll notice I don't have an out file set up. So this is one of those occasions when you might not necessarily want to write data to an XDF file. If I just want to see the first 10 rows of my source data here, the first 10 rows of CSV path, then it doesn't necessarily make sense to write that out to an XDF file. I'm really just taking a peek. And you can see, even though Rx import is working on that CSV path and not putting anything into an XDF, it still works just fine and gives me the first 10 rows of that data set. So this is a good way to get a quick peek at a data set, or you could also set numRows to a higher integer if you wanted to get a small data set that you could write some prototype code around before pulling in the entire data set. Now, if I only wanted to pull a particular subset of data from my source data, I could use row selection, and that's what I've done here. CSV path is still in data, XDF path is still out file, and this time I've added the row selection argument with just one criterion, which is default equal to 1, which is a flag for records in this data set that have a corresponding default. So I can go ahead and run this code, and I'll use rxgetInfo to look at the first few rows. Now, rxgetInfo is telling me that there are only 11 defaults in this entire dataset out of all 10,000 records, and since I set numrows to 15, I've actually got all 11 of those records here. But since I have out files set this time, I also have them stored in an XDF file. Now, there's actually one other new argument in this rx import call, and that's that I've set overwrite equal to true. As I've mentioned, rx import has two functions that control what rx import should do when your XDF already exists. And overwrite is one of those. So let's take a quick look at what overwrite really does. If your XDF file already exists, this is what you'll get if you try to import from a CSV file to that same XDF. You'll get an error message from rx import saying that the output file already exists, and to specify overwrite equals true if you want to replace it. Now, the reason that this happens is that with big data, an XDF file can take a little while to put together, and MRS doesn't want you to accidentally overwrite that XDF file with a careless piece of code, like rerunning an rx import or something like that. And so, by default, unless you set overwrite equal to true, rx import won't overwrite an existing XDF file. But if you do set overwrite to true, it will still overwrite that code. Now, in these videos, and in demo code, and in the exercises that hopefully you'll run after this video is over, you'll often set overwrite equal to true, just because it's more convenient that way. But if you were working in production with genuinely large datasets, you'd want to be very careful about setting overwrite to true, because it puts that big data file at risk. So let's see what happens once we have set overwrite equal to true. You can see the code runs basically as we would expect. There is, however, one scenario in which you can modify an existing XDF file without setting overwrite to true. And that's when you're appending new data that already shares the same structure as your existing data. So for example, our sample data that we've been working with is mortgage default data from the year 2000. So naturally, I might want to add the same data from the year 2001 to my existing data. And I can do that by setting append equals to true. So in this case, I'll go ahead and pull in the data for 2000, and I will check the results. And you can see I have 10,000 observations of 6 variables. Now, I'll set up a file path for the 2001 data. And then again, I'm just going to use rx import, this time with CSV path 2 as my end data, the same XDF path as my out file, and this time I'll set append equals to true. So I'll run that, and also rxgetInfo to check the results. And you can see now I have 20,000 data, same 6 variables, but now I have 2 blocks. And that's because the original block for the year 2000 data was left in place while the second block of 2001 data was added onto the file behind it. You can also use append to add several files to an XDF file all at once. So if you're given, say, a series of 10 CSV files, each with 1 year's worth of data, and you want to combine them into a single XDF file, you can use append to do that in an efficient way. It just takes a little bit of help from open source R functions like list files and lapply. First, I'm going to use list.files to get the paths to all of the mortgage default data files. And I'm going to create a new object called mortgage CSV paths that will store those. And you can see I've got 10 of them here, one for the year 2000, one for the year 2001, and so on through 2009. Next, I'm going to create a new XDF file to hold all 10 data sets, which I'll call mortgage XDF. And then finally, I'm going to use lapply to iterate over each of those paths and import them into mortgage XDF. So you can see here I'm using lapply over mortgage CSV paths. And then as my end data, I'm just using a stand-in object for each CSV file path. For out file, I've got mortgage XDF. And then finally, for append, I'm using the file.exist function to test whether or not mortgage XDF has been created. And so what will happen here is that the first time rx import runs, file.exist will check to see if mortgage XDF exists, and it won't yet because it hasn't been created. So it'll return a false and let rximport create a new XDF file. Now the second time that rximport is run for our year 2001 data, file.exists will check to see if mortgage.xdf exists, and it will this time because it has the year 2000 data in it. And so then it'll switch rximport into append mode and allow the year 2001 data to be added onto the XDF, and so on all the way through the year 2009. Now, if you're not familiar with R, lapply is basically sort of the R vernacular way of doing a for loop. So it might look a little strange to you, but just know that this is sort of a typical way to approach an iteration problem in R. So let's go ahead and run those results and use rxgetInfo to check. So you can see each time rximport ran, it gave me the same output of the rows read, the rows process, and the total time it took to read that chunk. And it's also spitting out a little bit of information about the destination XDF each time. And then finally here at the bottom, we've got the output of rxgetInfo, which tells me that there are now 100,000 observations of 6 variables in 10 blocks. And so there's a block for each year that was added, just because the way that rximport does this is that it leaves the pre-existing blocks in place each time it adds a new block. Now, one thing that we haven't talked about with rximport is how it identifies what type each variable is as it imports it from your source data. And the reason we haven't talked about that is because most of the time, rximport does a good job of identifying what type each variable is. But sometimes its best guess isn't quite right. So let's take a look at a small, simple data set that comes with R called mtcars. Now, as you can see, mtcars is just a set of statistics about some cars from the 1970s, including things like miles per gallon, the number of cylinders, the displacement, and so on. Now, mtcars is a data frame in R, but I want to import it to an XDF file just so we can see how rximport handles these variables. So I'll go ahead and do that here. Now you can see that all of these things have been imported as numeric variables, and that's perfectly reasonable. They are all numbers. But for the purposes of analysis, we might want to treat some of these things not as numeric variables, but as categorical variables, or as we would say in R, as factors. So some things like cylinder, whether or not the cylinders are configured in a V formation or in a straight line, and whether or not the car is automatic or manual, all might be more useful if they were modeled as categorical variables. So we could change those one by one using some functions that we'll learn about in the next session, but often it's easiest to specify their type right as we import them. And that's where the call classes argument comes in. So if we look here, I've created a second rximport, again drawing from mtcars and writing to xdfpath, but this time I've specified a call classes argument. And you can see that I have a named vector here where I'm specifying the name of the variable that I'd like to change, which in this case are CYL, VS, and AM, or the cylinders, the cylinder configuration, and automatic versus manual transmission. And on the right-hand side, I've specified which variable type I want those to be stored as. And in this case, I've chosen factor for all three of those variables. So if I run rximport this way, we can see that now the majority of the variables are still read in as numerics, but now I have some that are being read in as factors. And you can see that the output changes a little bit. Rather than giving me the low value and the high value, it's giving me the levels of each of those factors. So for cylinder, those levels are 6, 4, and 8. It might be more useful if it was 4, 6, and 8, but that's okay for now. And for the cylinder configuration variable, VS, I now have levels 0 and 1, indicating either a V configuration or a straight configuration. And for automatic and manual, I now have another 0 and 1 indicating manual or automatic. So call classes can be really useful if you know that you want certain variables to be read in a particular way, and you don't want to fuss with them after they've already been imported. But sometimes you need even more granular control over the way that your variables are imported. You might want to change the names, you might want to specify the order of the levels, and so on. And so the high-powered version of call classes is another argument called call info. Now, call info lets you do many more things than just specify the class. So for example, we could change the name of a variable. So in this case, I'm changing the name of disp to dispqin so that it's clear to anyone looking at this data set that the displacement is measured in cubic inches. I'm also revisiting three variables that I converted to factors. First, for cylinder, it really makes more sense if 4 comes before 6 in the level ordering. And so using call info, I can specify that I want sil to be a factor with the levels 4, 6, and 8, and it'll come out with the levels in that correct order. Now, I've always thought that the VS variable, which is our cylinder configuration variable in MT cars, is kind of an opaque variable name. So if I want to rename a variable, I can do that using call info as well. So in this case, I'm changing VS to be named cylinder config, and I'm also specifying that I want its levels to be 0 and 1, but I want the names of those levels to be changed to V and straight, because that's just much more human readable. And you can see I'm doing the same thing with the AM variable, where I'm changing the name to transmission, which is much more transparent, and giving the levels new names of automatic and manual. It's just a lot easier for a human to read. So if we run this code and check the results, we can see that now my cylinder levels are in the correct order, 4, 6, 8, and I have much more human readable variable names and factor levels on the other two variables. So you can see with all the arguments listed here, you really have quite a lot of power to customize the way that your data is imported from your source data set into an XDF file. But if you find that you need even more power, you might want to take a look at data sources. Now, so far, we've been using data sources, but they've been strictly behind the scenes. Data sources are wrappers that help MRS work with various different kinds of data. There's a data source that wraps an XDF file. There's a data source that wraps a text file. And essentially, they're just ways to help RX import understand how it can work with a particular source of data. So far in all the examples we've seen, the data sources have been implicit, which means that when RX import looks at a file that ends with .xdf, it assumes that that's an XDF file. When it looks at a file that ends with a .csv, it assumes that that's a CSV file. And most of the time, you're perfectly fine leaving those data sources implicit. But if you have an unusual data source, or a data source like an ODBC connection to a database, you'll need to use a data source directly. They also have some other benefits, like letting you use a limited number of open source R functions directly on a data source, but it's not so many that it's something that you need to worry about. MRS includes data sources for text files of a wide variety of kinds, whether they're delimited or fixed width or so on. It includes data sources for the SAS and SPSS proprietary formats, for Teradata and HDFS, for databases over ODBC connection. And also, we won't cover this here, but MRS also runs in-database in SQL Server. So that's one database that you can access without ODBC connections. Just to give you a quick look at what data sources look like, I'll convert our existing XDF file into an XDF data source. And so you can see I do that just by wrapping the path to that XDF file with the rx_xdf_data function. So now that I've created the XDF data source, let's just look at some differences between using a path to an XDF and using the actual XDF data source. So first, we can see a difference just by printing the two objects to the console. When I print XDF path to the console, I get just a path to that temporary XDF file I created. But when I print XDF source to the console, I get more of an object output. And the main part of that is still just the path to that XDF file, but I get a little indicator that this is an XDF data source, and a bit of information about the file system. Now, if I were on a distributed file system, I'd get something a little more informative than that. But we can see that you can also use head directly on an XDF data source. If I use it on XDF path, well, R thinks the head of a character vector of length 1 is just the first item of that vector, which in this case is the XDF path. But because an XDF data source is an actual R object and not just a file path, it can have methods associated with it. So the head function now has a method for XDF data sources, and it knows this is a data set. I can go to that data set and get the first 6 records to print to the console. And a similar thing is happening with the summary function from OpenSourceR. When it looks at an XDF path, it's just a vector of length 1, class character, mode character. But when I get the summary of an XDF source, it gives me kind of the output that we would expect, which is a summary of all the numeric variables and counts for all of the factor variables. So if you do a lot of interactive work where you use head and summary from OpenSourceR to look at your datasets, it might be convenient for you to create all of your XDF files as XDF data sources. Finally, as I mentioned, you have to set up a data source in order to import data over ODBC from a database. So the first thing you need to do is make sure that you set up ODBC on your machine. Now, once you've got that in place and pointed to your database, you can start setting up data sources. Now, it's a little counterintuitive, but each data source, in this case using the function rxodbcdata, represents just one query from the database. And we'll see an example of this in just a moment. So for example, if I set up a path to the SQLite database that comes with the MRS sample datasets, and then I need to create a connection string for this database. Now, this is not something that you need to scrutinize closely. Anytime you're setting up a connection to a database, it's pretty easy to just look up the required connection string and type it in here. So all I'm doing is saying that my driver for this is going to be the SQLite 3 ODBC driver, and I'm going to point it to the database path there, and then I'll create my RxODBC data source. Now you can see that I'm using that connection string here to point to the database, but then I'm also specifying a query that I want for this particular data source. And in this case, that's going to be a really simple one. I'm just going to select all records, all variables from the table claims. So I'll run that code to set up my data source. And then I'll create a new XDF file. In this case, I'm going to create it as a data source just to show you what that would look like. And finally, I'll use rximport to pull the results from the claims table into my new XDF. So you can see my end data, instead of pointing to a CSV file, is now pointing to my database data source. And my out file, instead of just pointing to the path of an XDF file, is pointing to my XDF data source object. So I can run those, and you can see that the results come out just as you would expect. Now, while setting up an ODBC connection is pretty straightforward, it is worth noting that SQL Server 2016 can run MRS internally, and in that case, you don't need to set up an ODBC connection at all. So that's it for importing data. In the next section, we'll be talking about data manipulation, by which I mean creating simple variables, creating complex variables, and I'll explain the difference in the next video, sampling datasets, sorting datasets, and merging datasets. So be sure to check out the exercises accompanying this video so that you get some hands-on experience importing datasets and get a feel for the XDF file before we start modifying XDF files in the next session. Thanks, and see you next time.